Hi, good evening, everybody. Welcome back. This week is Parshas Chukas, and I want to finish up with the halachas of Refuah on Shabbos. Now, even though this hasn't been comprehensive, but I've been trying to cover whatever typically comes up. If there is any aspects of it that you would like me to discuss, don't hesitate, please, to let me know, email or text, and I'll be able to discuss it next week. So until now, we've discussed different categories of Refuah on Shabbos. We've spoken about Pikuach Nefesh, which you can do anything. Sakanas Eiver, which means there's a limb at risk, either of Chas V'Shalom losing the limb entirely or losing functionality of that particular limb from a finger to anything larger than that. And in that situation, you are allowed to do anything other than a daraisa. Then the category which we'll be discussing this week, the two categories are chel Hashem b'sakana and mechosh. Chel Hashem b'sakana means a person who is sick, but there is no danger. And sick, the qualification of being sick means that you feel sick enough that you need to go to bed, which is called, in the terminology of the Paiskim, that's referred to as chel kol haguf. Your whole body is sick. And mechosh means something bothers you. You have a pain, you have an ache, an itch, whatever. Something is annoying you, it's hurting you, it's bothering you, even if it's giving you pain. It's only a mechosh, and basically nothing is permitted for that. So I want to discuss more about the difference between a chel Hashem b'sakana and a mechosh. Now, one important thing to know is that a child automatically has the status of a chel Hashem b'sakana. No matter what, regardless of how trivial the thing that's bothering him is, we consider a child to be a chel Hashem b'sakana up till 13 by a boy and 12 by a girl. And therefore, any medication may be used because the iser, like we mentioned last week, the iser of medication is just solely the iser of refuah, and that is one thing that is permitted for a chel Hashem b'sakana. Now, that even though that's true, but no iser min ha-Torah may be performed because the chel is ein b'sakana, as by definition is ein b'sakana. There's no pikuach nefesh involved, no life-threatening illness involved, so nothing which is prohibited min ha-Torah may be done. So therefore, when it comes up often is that if a child needs a cream to be applied, that presents a problem because smearing on a cream is a possible iser min ha-Torah of mimareach, of smoothing. And when you smear on a cream, you smooth it out over the body, so that presents a problem min ha-Torah. So that wouldn't be something you'd be allowed to do, certainly not for yourself, and even not for a child or a baby. So what are your options? So there are three options, and it really depends on the case. Sometimes what you can do is you can just squeeze the cream out without actually smearing it at all, and then apply a bandage over it without, you know, intentionally trying to smooth it out, which means like you just tape on the Band-Aid and you don't like push it down to smooth out the cream. Likewise, you can always put Desitin on a baby, just squeeze it out of the tube, and then put on the diaper and it'll smooth itself out. So all that is fine because you're not actually smoothing, you're just dropping the cream on, and that's okay. Now, obviously, this won't always work, and this won't always be an option, but that's option number one. Option number two is, and this works when you need to put a larger area, you can apply cream to a bandage before Shabbos, smooth it out all over the bandage, and then keep that bandage in a plastic bag so that it doesn't dry up. So that's a practical aid to where you can have the cream ready so that you don't have to come on to smearing. Now, these both don't work if, A, you haven't prepared anything before Shabbos, and, B, sometimes the cream needs to be applied, like, over a really large area, over a whole baby's body. So, obviously, none of these options will work. In that situation, the only option that remains is to ask a non-Jew to apply it. One of the things that is permitted for a chel Hashem b'sakana, child or adult, is you are allowed to ask a non-Jew to do anything. You don't need to be merames, which means you don't have to go round about, you don't have to just hint. You can say straight out and ask a non-Jew to do whatever it is that's necessary, even if it's a malacha d'oraisa, but you can ask a non-Jew to do that for a chayla she'en b'sakana, which we said certainly applies to a child. So the option would be then you can tell the ask a non-Jew to smear the cream all over the child's body. But outside of that, it is really a problematic thing. There is one situation where it's more lenient when it comes to applying cream, and that is on Yontif Sheni, on the second day of Yontif, provided that it's not Shabbos, it's just the second day of Yontif, and with the exception of Rosh Hashanah. So on, let's say, the second day of Pesach, the second day of Sukkot, Simchas Torah, Akron Til Pesach, all those times when it's second day Yontif and it's not Shabbos, you are allowed to apply cream for a child or for an adult. That can be done by yourself. That's the only exception. But otherwise, you would need to resort to asking a non-Jew. Now, asking a non-Jew is not only for cream. Like I said, you can ask a non-Jew to do anything. You can ask a non-Jew to call a doctor. You can ask a non-Jew to turn on the light, turn off the light for the purpose of a chayla she'en b'sakana, turn on the heat, turn off the heat, any of the things that you might need a non-Jew to do. It's not a problem. You can ask them to do it for the use of a chayla. Now, let's say a person isn't actually sick. They, though, have something which is so painful, it prevents you from functioning normally. So there, even if you aren't technically lying down because you don't have that sick feeling, but there is so much pain that you can't really go around about your daily activities. That also would be considered a chayla she'en b'sakana because you feel it in your whole body, so to speak, even though you're not actually sick. And therefore, you'd be able to take medicine, you'd be able to take Tylenol and do those things, and you could ask a non-Jew to help you if that would help. But like maybe to pick up a medicine from the pharmacy, if that would be an option. But other than that, if a person just has something which is hurting him, but it isn't such a powerful pain that it's actually stopping you from doing anything, it would only be called a mechus, and you can't even take a Tylenol. So sometimes a person has a toothache. If it hurts, but it's not like inundating you, it's just a mechush, and there's really nothing you can do. You can't even take Tylenol, you can't take aspirin. However, if it's a really, really powerful toothache where it's really preventing you from doing anything, so that, like I said before, would render you a chayla, a sick person, and you can take medicine. And also, if there's any possibility of infection, which sometimes is the case and you can tell by swelling, then you need to seek advice from a doctor or a dentist. Chazal considered a infection in the teeth pikuach nefesh. So that is something that you should take seriously. Included in the prohibition of refuah is all household remedies as well. So gargling salt water is also prohibited, and any other sort of procedure which you might have inherited from your mother, grandmothers, etc., cannot be done if it's something which is clearly being done for refuah. However, if what is being done can be viewed as something else, for example, let's say someone wants to sip some alcohol, soothe a canker sore or to soothe a toothache, that's permitted because it looks like you're drinking alcohol. Or if you want to wash a part of your body with hot water to soothe an ache, that's permitted because it just looks like you're washing yourself. So as long as it's not clearly being done for healing purposes, then it is permitted to do these type of household remedies. This week's parasha, Parashas Chukas, is related to the story of the Meimariva, where Moshe and Aaron were commanded to speak to the rock, and instead they hit the rock because Klal Yisrael were not getting water anymore once Miriam passed away. So it was in her zchus that there was a be'er, there was water coming out of the rock, and when she passed away, it stopped. So they weren't getting any water. And Moshe and Aaron were commanded to speak to the rock, and instead they hit the rock. And as a result of that, they were prevented from entering Eretz Yisrael. Now, we, of course, don't begin to understand what is the pshat in this story. What is the simple understanding of this story? And my Rosh Hashiva used to explain that the Ramban says, chet ze lo yinisparish bakosuv. This chet, this avera, has not been explained in the pasuk. And he said that what this means is, there is no explanation in Pshat. It's learning the Sparash because there is no Mahalach that can, it can be understood according to Pshat. It only can be understood according in the higher and deeper levels of understanding the Torah. So that's how far and how distant we are from having any sort of grasp on what actually occurred. But nevertheless, many Mefarshim do give various explanations, and the point of those explanations is to teach us. Now, it's not necessarily to explain what happened, and we find this in many times, many places in the Torah, that although the meaning of something is clearly hidden and it's clearly beyond what we can understand, there still can be many different points that we can learn from the face value of the story. This is an aspect of Shivan Panam L'Torah, that the Torah can be understood in many different ways. So although there's no Pashup Shad in the Avera of Moshe and Aaron, and there's nothing we can understand and actually attribute to them, but there are things that we can learn. Now Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu was punished because he hit the rock instead of speaking to it. Now what's the difference if you hit the rock or you speak to the rock? So the Pasuk says that this is a Chilul Hashem. The Pasuk says, Yan loy hamantem bi lahakti sheni. You didn't believe in me, trust in me to make a Kiddush Hashem. So apparently there was a Chilul Hashem. What was the Chilul Hashem? So Rashi explains that if Moshe would have spoken to the rock, Klal Yisrael would have made a Kal V'chomer. They would have said like this. They would have said, if a rock, which can't see or can't hear, listens to Hashem's command, if so, we certainly should. And being that he's hit the rock, so then they would lost that opportunity to make that Kal V'chomer, to learn that from the rock. Therefore, with the Chilul Hashem, was a lack of Kiddush Hashem. Now, the Ramban already asks on Rashi that what way was the nace diminished by hitting the rock? There's no less of a miracle. Water doesn't come out of rocks, whether you hit them or whether you talk to them. So why wouldn't Klal Yisrael be impressed either way? And in addition, there's another interesting aspect to what Rashi says, is that this particular characteristic of rocks that we mentioned, that they don't hear or they don't see, seems strange. Rocks are not animate. They're not alive. We could have just said, rocks aren't even alive and they listen to Hashem. Certainly us. So what's the point being made here? What would we have learned from rocks? Why specifically that they can hear and can see? What is this coming to teach us? So Moshe Feinstein Zatzal, Sefer Darash Moshe, gives an original explanation to this and to answer this question. He says that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have spoken to the rock, it would have demonstrated that a person should never despair of teaching Torah to people, even if it seems that he or she is not being listened to. He says the power of Torah can't be underestimated, and a person should never think, I'm talking to the wall, no one's listening, no one seems to care, no one will even remember what I said in a few minutes' time. As Rabbi Franz says, Rabbanim and the Nevi'im and the leaders of Klal Yisrael have been doing this since time immemorial. And Ramesha adds that he says, when one is being mechanic children, telling them to retire or telling them mussar, we shouldn't think it's pointless. We shouldn't think, hey, they're not interested, they're just waiting to leave. He says, Ramesha Rabbeinu would have spoken to the rock, and interestingly, in truth, the Medrash says that Hashem commanded Ramesha Rabbeinu to say a parak of Gemara, say a parak of Mishnah, to learn with the rock, so to speak, to say Torah at the rock. It would have demonstrated that even when it seems you're speaking to a rock, it will eventually have an effect. Water will soon pour forth. Don't despair and don't give up. That's what Ramesha says. It's a beautiful point. Now, Ramesha doesn't explain this further, but I think that this is really what the point that Rashi is bringing out when he says that rocks don't listen and don't hear. I think what he might mean is that Klal Yisrael would have spoken to themselves as well. The Torah refers to our hearts when it's difficult for us to change, that our hearts are like rock, lev ha'evan. They don't hear and they don't see and they don't listen. They're not paying attention. They're not changing. And sometimes it seems no matter how much we try to inspire ourselves, how many times we listen to a shir of our Torah, whether it's about keeping the Torah or the mitzvahs, not speaking lashon hara, whether it's about davening with kavana, sometimes we feel it's just like a rock. It's not being moved. Nothing is happening, nothing is changing. And this is what Hashem wants to demonstrate to Klal Yisrael. Don't give up. Even if you're speaking to a literal rock, if you talk Torah and Musa to it, it will have an effect. It will go into the neshama. it will have an effect on your heart. It will have an effect on yourself. And at some point, it'll cause water to come forth. At some point, the rock will break. The rock will split in half. Like Rashi says, Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock with his staff and it splits. You can speak to a rock and it can split in half. You can speak to a rock and it can have an effect. And at some point, somewhere down the line, something will change. It's amazing sometimes you hear from people what things were, that were said to them, what an effect it had on them. I remember myself, different things I heard from people when I was young that I remember till this day. I'm constantly inspired by them. And I have no doubt that those people would have absolutely no recollection of ever saying those things. They won't even know I was listening. They might not even know who I am. I know people that came to me and said, oh, you know, you told me this and this when we were in yeshiva together 25 years ago, and I have certainly no recollection of that. And I may or may have not said it, but these people apparently were inspired by it. We can never, never underestimate the power of our words on ourselves and our words on other people. And that's what Rav Meitz is saying, that we have to learn over here from this story. One thing we can take home from this story is that you can even speak to a rock and it can have an effect. The words of Torah are so powerful. They're so all-encompassing. It can go into a person's neshama and they stay there. And at some point, eventually, they bring out the best in us, causing us to flow, causing the water to flow. Have a good night and a good Shabbos. Kol tov.